if children are old enough to love, they're old enough to grieve. This is the third episode in a podcast series on child and youth grief, produced by Victoria Hospice. We're once again joined by Victoria Hospice Child and Youth Counselor Allison Whiteman.
So this particular podcast is aimed at both parents and professionals, the information that'll be shared.
This third and final episode covers some practical ways to help support children and youth.
So I'm going to start by focusing on younger children and specific ways to be able to support them. One of the things that's really important about the younger children is that the support needs to be concrete. So that means it's something that they can touch, see, smell. It has to be in the here and now and not an abstract idea. And the reason that that's so important is that it's all about their brain development. And younger children, they are concrete thinkers. And so the information that they understand needs to be at that level. So what are some examples then of what could be concrete activities that you could do to support a bereaved child or children? One thing would be to help them make a book of their own about the person who has died. So it could be a shared project that you do together, and they can decide the content that they want to have in it. But then it's something that they have to refer back to whenever they want, and they may keep for the rest of their lives. So that's one example. Another possibility would be to put together a photo album as a family activity or on an individual basis again, or scrapbooking can be really popular. So that's another possibility as well. Family could go and buy a candle, a very specific special candle, which is the intention of lighting it on special occasions as a way to include the person who has died in those special occasions, such as like birthdays and holidays. So the child is a part of choosing the candle or solely chooses it on their own. And then that candle keeps coming out every time that there's some kind of celebration. Another kind of play on that is if you don't want to have a candle, you could have the child choose a picture of the person who has died. And then it's the picture that comes out specifically on special occasions, birthdays, etc. So again, it's a way of having that person still included in what's going on with the family. In terms of an adult, one of the things that you can do with younger children is act as a model for grief. So there's many different ways of doing that. I think one of the really important ones is to talk about the person who has died as it naturally comes up in the family, so that the children learn that it's okay for them to talk about that person as well. And not in forced kinds of ways, just when there's an opportunity, you just have a natural inclination to bring that person up, then go ahead and do that. And if you're a professional that's interacting with a child, I really encourage you not to shy away from talking about the person who has died with that child, because again, that gives the child the message that in this setting, it's not okay for me to do that. And they will follow that cue. But if you make invitation around that you're okay with them talking, then they will have the opportunity and most likely follow that. Also allow the children to see your own grief, so not to feel that you need to hide it from them. If they have a sense of never seeing you grieving, then the message that they get is that they're not supposed to either. So just allowing them to see that, letting them know that you're okay, you can still take care of them, and that you're feeling sad right now because that person has died. Something else that you can do is to read age-appropriate books. So whatever age your child is, find something that fits with them that are about grief. There's lots of them available, and libraries can be a really good source for them. Once you've finished reading the book, then it's a real opportunity for conversation. You can ask them what are their thoughts or feelings and reactions to the story. Same thing with a movie. If you watch a movie where somebody has died, then when the movie is finished, that's a real opportunity to ask them about their thoughts and feelings and reactions to what happened in that part of the movie or throughout the whole movie. Any kind of opportunity that comes up, use that as an opportunity. And if you happen to be a teacher in a classroom where you're showing a movie where something like where somebody dies, there's a couple of things I encourage is, one, give the student a heads up about it and let them have a choice about whether they want to see that or not. And then if they choose to, again, it's an opportunity for conversation afterwards. But if you were going to have a group discussion, then I would also encourage you to check in individually with that child to see where they were at with it. Keeping to the same schedule and routines as much as possible is really helpful for children. Gives them that sense of predictability at a time when things feel really unpredictable. Gives that same sense of safety and security. And also, one of the things that I really encourage parents to do, this would be a parent-specific one, is if your child is of preschool or school age, to really let the people in those organizations know what is happening, because they are an extra layer of support for both yourself and your children. So involving them as much as possible is really important. So now let's look more closely at support for tweens and teens, and what does that look like? The first thing to say about that is that their cognitive understanding there has shifted. So the support doesn't need to be so solely focused on concrete here and now, because they are actually able to think and relate in abstract ways. So they're the ones that come, as I mentioned in the developmental podcast, with the big questions, the kind of adult-like questions that we all have. So the support can be at that higher level as well. And that's kind of a capturing of support for that age group, all of them. Then more specifically, one of the things I think that's really important with this age group is letting them know that it's okay to still have fun. The younger kids just tend to naturally do that anyway and don't really question it. But when you get into the tweens and teens age group, they kind of will start to question, well, I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't go out and have fun. I shouldn't have laughed. You know, I shouldn't be laughing. My mom just died. But it's okay for all of that to happen. And I think that it's helpful for them to have that reinforced, because their tendency is to feel badly about it. And it's natural for them to also want to have fun. It's natural for all of us to want to do that. And it's okay. It's healthy for that to be a part of their grief process as well. The other thing about them is, there's two things. One is that there can be a tendency to just want to be alone at times. And that's okay. I find that often parents will kind of worry about that, or a teacher might worry about that. But having some time alone, some space to themselves, I think is really just developmentally what goes on for them anyway, and is still present when they're grieving. If you're seeing somebody who's completely withdrawn, that's a different story, and I'll get into that a bit more later in this podcast. But sporadic kind of time alone is fine. It's something that, as I said, is kind of developmentally appropriate for this age group in general. What are some more specific activities that they can be a part of? One of them is, if there's any kind of planning for special events or holidays, have them involved in that. Ask them what they would like their role to be. What are their ideas? They'll have them. And it's just much more helpful if they're able to say what they are. Any kind of, you know, for example, if you're a family that celebrates a religious holiday, the first one that comes up, how do you want to handle that this time? What are the things is there anything you want to change? Do you want to keep everything exactly the same? Just have them involved in that kind of planning, because, as I said, they'll have their ideas about it. Other things are to kind of really draw on more expressive ways of interacting. So using art or music or both for emotional expression. For example, you could ask someone to paint what grief feels like and then be able to talk about it afterwards. Or you could ask someone to shape what anger feels like in clay. Or what would you want to do with this piece of clay when you're really angry? Because that's a safe thing to pound on. It's not going to damage anybody or anything. You could ask them to write a song about their grief. Or you could ask them to choose a song that brings comfort to them, and then have them share what it is that is important to them, what it is that comforts them about that song. So there's lots of other ways of expressing. Tends to be kind of a more comfortable way, I find, for them to be able to talk about their feelings. Another activity that I find that this age group really gets keen on is to create a memorial page. And there are specific websites where you can actually do that. Tweens and teens are pretty tech savvy, so they can, I'm sure, they have ways of creating their own website if they wanted to with the memorial page on it as well. But that's something that I find is quite attractive to this age group. And another possibility is, and it helps with keeping that connection going when someone has died, is to suggest that they write letters to the person who has died, just letting them know what's going on in their life, what it is that they're thinking about, what it is that they're planning. Because what can feel like, understandably, a big gap for them is, you know, as they grow, they hit these big developmental milestones. And if a parent isn't there for high school graduation, for example, or a switch from middle school to high school, you know, they still really want that parent to be involved somehow, understandably. And so sometimes writing them a letter about what it is that they're thinking about and how they're feeling about this next step and what kinds of advice do they wish that their parent would give them, all of that can be really helpful and healing. Another possibility is just keeping a journal and writing any time, any thoughts that it comes up, and ways to release. And journals can include drawings and all kinds of expressive stuff like that as well. So it doesn't have to be, you know, written. And for some people, just the notion of writing something in a book doesn't feel good, but they feel quite fine with typing away on a computer. And so it can, just kind of remember that journals can happen in many different ways, shapes, and forms. And that all of this stuff, if they're concerned about somebody seeing it, can be destroyed so that nobody does see it. They write it, they destroy it, if that's what they want to do. I think that privacy piece is important for them to know. For teachers or school counselors, that 12 to 14 year age group, it's really quite common, and I don't know why, but I do know it's common, for them to write about their loss experience in their schoolwork. So I guess, first of all, I offer, don't be alarmed if that's happening, but also I offer that if that happens, that's an opportunity for you to be able to have a conversation with them, not just about what it is they've written, you know, and the home, you know, the learning piece of it, but that deeper level of, oh, so, you know, what's this been like for you, and how's it for you at school? Do you feel like you're getting enough support? Whatever. And for parents too, to know if your child comes home with something that, and they've written about their experience, that doesn't need alarm bells going off. It's an avenue and they're taking advantage of it. And it's really about them processing what it is that's going on, helping them to understand at a different level. The last piece that I would want to offer about the tweens and teens is that, again, developmentally, it's just appropriate. It's what they all do, whether they're grieving or not. They turn to their peers more than their family for support. And I would say that that is still true in many ways in terms of their grief, too, that they will look to peers for support around that to a degree. I think what feels good to them is it's a place that they can actually have some control around it. So they choose who it is that they want to let know, and they choose who doesn't. They don't want to have no. They choose whether they want to talk about it with their friends or whether they don't want to talk about it with their friends. And that those decisions get made truly on a very individual, personal level, I find. As a counselor working with this age group, I always ask about friends and how they're navigating that system, because it truly is an individual experience. Some want everybody to know, others want nobody to know, specific friends to know, but I don't talk about it. We don't talk about it. And that's okay with me. I don't want to talk about it. This is my escape from it. So there's a lot of that interchange going on, and that's okay. That's healthy. And if you're a parent, not to be concerned if it seems like there's a lot of peer stuff going on and not so much coming your way. If you're letting them know, you know, that they've got permission and all of that stuff to be able to talk with you, then you've done the work that needs to happen there. And they naturally are leaning towards friends at that age group anyway. So,
Allison covers, as a parent or professional, what you should look for as warning signs that might indicate a child's, teen, or tween are struggling with their grief.
What they would do is, if you're noticing any of these signs, what it is it's an indication to find out more. It doesn't necessarily always mean they're, you know, absolutely they're struggling with their grief, but if you're noticing this, it really is time to find out more information and then make some decisions from there. The big cues, and it really doesn't matter the age group, the biggest thing is a change in behavior. If you're noticing any kinds of changes in behavior, and I'll get down to more specific behaviors in a moment, that's the big sign that a child is struggling or a teen is struggling with something. So what can those changes in behavior look like? One of the really common ones is having difficulty separating from the parent. And what this can look like in a young child is that they're literally clinging onto you and your body and they don't want you to go. And there's a lot of crying. What it can look like in an older child, a tween or a teen, is a need to know where you are at every moment in time. Kind of like you're being accountable to them. If there's someone who's texting, then they're sending you lots of texts about where are you, what are you doing, that kind of thing. So that's how it can appear with the older age group. Another sign is increased anxiety. If it has existed before, or if it's never existed before, it's now formed, newly formed anxiety. Another one is withdrawal from usual activities that they enjoy. If they've always been a soccer player and all of a sudden they're not wanting to play soccer, like, what is that about? That's a big change for them. Why are they pulling back from something? So again, like I said, you just want to find out more. What's that about? Doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem, but you need to start asking some more questions. Another example can be ongoing anger. Now, anger or sadness, you know, as we know, are typical responses in grief. But if it feels like it's been 6 months of anger and there's been no shift, then they really need to check out something. Or if it feels like it's been 6 months of sadness or 6 months of guilt and there's really been absolutely no change whatsoever, then we need to find out more about what's going on, what's behind that. Another sign will be difficulties with friends. They maybe haven't had any, you know, peer relationship problems before, and now those are starting to happen. What's that about? Are they having trouble navigating through that? Just wanting to find out more. For the older group, you can see some risk-taking behaviors. So things like use of substances or alcohol, suicidal thoughts. Those are kinds of things that when a teen is struggling, they may kind of fall to. And with all the age groups, difficulty with sleeping, and that can look a few different ways. One is having difficulty just falling asleep. That can be a challenge. Or sometimes it can look like they fall asleep quite fine, but they'll wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep. So that's another way that it can show up. Also, there, if a child or a teen is experiencing nightmares, in an ongoing way, it's natural for them to occur every once in a while. But if there's an ongoing way that this is occurring, we want to find out more about what's going on with that. And a final one would be depression. If you're noticing that, again, this is more tweens and teens, but it could show up with a child as well. If a child is feeling depressed, talking about stress, being depressed, really withdrawn from activities, having difficulty engaging in activities, like, for example, even getting to school, we need to find out more about what's going on there. So those are the red flags. I do want to also stress that a lot of these points are very typical. So, for example, anxiety or sleep difficulty are very typical experiences in early grief, and not to be concerned. What I'm talking about, and I really hesitate to throw out timelines. I know people always ask me about timelines, and I hesitate to throw them out because it's not a hard and fast rule. But if you're finding that there's no shift, no kind of change whatsoever in a behavior, and it's been, say, like 6 months or more, then we need to be looking at it. For it to be present in new grief is typical, common. If it's still present in the same intense kind of way, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, 2 years down the line, then we need to be looking at that. There's something more that needs to be found out. So what do you do? What do you do if you're noticing these kinds of things? So then I encourage you to seek professional help. in whatever way, shape, or form is available in your community. It could be through starting with your family doctor, if you have one, and finding out, because the family doctor can be a link to the community resources and the mental health resources in your community. You can search out what are the community organizations that are available in your community. Most local hospices have bereavement support programs attached to them. If they don't, they do know what are the organizations that provide that care within the community, so they're a good place to connect with. There's private counseling practitioners who work, specialize in working with children and teens, so that's another avenue. And checking out your child and youth mental health services, whatever those are available. If you haven't connected with a school counselor and you know they're of school age, I really encourage you to do that as well, because that's another really great bridge place to help you get connected with other organizations for your family.
This episode and the series was made possible by the generosity of our donors. Thank you to Allison for sharing her expertise and for you for taking the time to listen.
I wish you all well in this. I think that you've got some good tools to be able to support your children and your teens and your families well. Thanks so much for the time that you've taken.
For more details on Victoria Hospice's bereavement services and more of our resources, visit victoriahospice.org.